You're listening to Trendy Lobotomy Podcast. I'm Tori.
I'm Christy.
And
I'm Malcolm.
And
Chase.
And that would be Chuck.
And we're still remote.
Yeah, we still are.
Kind of.
But now there's googly eyes over everything. There will be pictures you guys will know.
Tori threw googly. God, I can't even fucking speak.
Your mic is talking to me.
Yep. Tori threw googly eyes at me and we stuck them on everything. It was great. It was wonderful.
Okay, let's tighten this up.
We got stories to tell.
We do.
Some damn stories to tell. How did we figure out who was going first? Did we record that?
Yes.
We did, but I don't know that we'll... Malcolm made us roll initiative to figure out who was going first. I think that's probably how we're going to have to figure this out from now on.
Randomly anymore.
No.
The dice decide.
No, we weren't really doing it randomly earlier,
but maybe...
Both. Well, now that you with have to addition. Go, you let's put some mechanics on this.
Right.
That's exactly. Malcolm just DM'd that shit.
He did.
And everybody gets great experience.
Shocking.
Let's go.
All right.
What can we use the experience points for?
I don't know. We'll do a treasure hunt at the end.
Okay.
You can cash in your XP for awesome imagining. Okay. Never mind.
So, do you have a table somewhere? I'm sure you can find one online real quick.
What I'm going to need is a D20.
Cursed objects. One of them has to be a train.
And most of them have googly eyes on it. For God's sake. What doesn't have googly eyes on it in this table right now?
The wine.
My cup! That needs to be changed.
Oh, God. Why didn't I...
See, when you point shit out, this is what happens.
Guess what, Chrissy?
So we're gonna call
Chrissy Willow first.
The sinking fields in my living room.
Oh my God, Chrissy. Okay, I'm going first.
What you talking about?
Union Station in Indianapolis.
Let's go.
Yes, my sources are CrownPlazaDowntown.com, Wikipedia.org, and Haunted Backroads, Central Indiana, and Other Stories by Nicole R. Kabrowski. Another book that I got at Fallen Leaf Books in Nashville, Indiana. They are not sponsoring us, but I'm totally going to give them
a plug.
You can find them at www.fallenleafbooks.com. They have a lot of books on the paranormal and other interesting things, especially haunted Indiana type stuff.
Urban legends.
Yes. So, and they do some events and stuff, and Nashville is just a fun little town. So, go check them out. Anyway, so Union Station. Union Station was the first Union Station, quote unquote, in the United States. It solved the issue of competing railroads that each had its own station in the city by making one station for everyone to use.
And became the model for the nation.
It did. That. It really did.
It's a central station.
Yeah, so it's in the wholesale district of Indianapolis. In August 1849, the Union Railway Company was formed and began to lay tracks to connect various railroads. The station building itself opened September 10th, 1853 at 39 Jackson Place and was run by Indianapolis Union Railway. The new, bigger station was built in November 1886, and that's the one that we know.
Okay, that was a good chunk of that.
Okay. It opened September 1888, and the head house and clock tower are still standing. So that's...
Those are the remnants of that original. Okay.
Yep. It's a three-story brick and granite building with a rose window. If you don't know what a rose window is, it's a really cool stained glass window. We have two buildings in Indianapolis that have rose windows. Second Presbyterian Church and Union Station. There are probably others that I don't know about, but those are the two that
for sure come to mind.
It has a slate roof, and the clock tower is 185 feet.
It is.
By 1900, over 200 passenger trains per day were being serviced through Union Station. Rail travel began to decline after World War I. Union Station was almost demolished. But in 1971, the then mayor of Indianapolis, Richard Luger, I know. Allocated $197,000 toward the purchase of the building.
Which would not purchase a window in the building today.
Probably not. It was placed on the National Register of Historic Places on July 14th, 1982.
How do you get money for a building or site?
Right.
Hey, and I bet you there's a plaque somewhere.
In 1984, it was converted to a festival marketplace, the shed. So Union Station was also one of the first rail stations to have what they called the train shed, and they lifted it because it was blocking the railway. They didn't want to block road traffic in Indianapolis.
There was
so they so
road
it's
traffic.
Lifted, and the shed, the train shed part is still there.
That's pretty cool.
And that's where a lot of the festival marketplace was. So it reopened in April 1986, mostly through the efforts of Robert and Sandra Bornes. It was a collection of restaurants, nightclubs, and specialty stores.
There it is.
It was great. I mean, we all probably went there as kids. I know that one of the guys that we grew up with, his parents had a store there, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was in the 90s, and he rented
it. Jaded.
Yeah.
It was Mr. Martin, and he did a very cool card shop that was short-lived but very awesome.
Yeah.
And those are my memories of it. Is it just this commerce mecca and groups of people that were entrepreneurially oriented and kind of fed off each other that way.
And there was like an NBC store and a train store. There was a place called Soundtracks where you could go in and do like a recording studio.
And make there faces are,
yes,
at whoever
and make
is singing.
Faces at people who were singing. there were statues installed throughout the facility. They were kind of creepy. It's kind of like walking through Carmel. And
oh, shit. I forgot
the Crown Plaza Hotel, I think if I read websites right, at that's the point where the Crown Plaza was added to Union Station.
Okay. Because that is attached part of.
That is part of Union Station. That is to this day.
There's no differentiation as part of Union Station.
The opening of Circle Center Mall in 1995 drew off a lot of Union Station's retail customers.
What?
Uh-oh. You raised your hand.
I served Beef Wellington at that event.
Yeah, at the opening of Circle Center.
There was a certain catering
company.
And yes.
I had my bat mitzvah there, David.
Who has no regard for
winter,
child labor laws.
And I was hoofing pans of Beef Wellington and chicken Kiev from a box truck.
Oh, Jesus.
Nice.
Up the stairs to the opening of, yes, so I'm sorry.
The Arts Garden?
Yes, absolutely. Yep. It was a big to-do at the time.
Yeah.
It was huge.
The last of the, like, restaurants and everything to leave was Hooters that left in 1997.
Downtown.
Not surprising.
Yeah. Senior Skip Day.
Okay. Senior Skip Day, we were too busy kidnapping people.
Yes, absolutely.
There's no statute of limitations on that, Dory.
Really?
This we that has been spoken of is not hard.
I wasn't there. I was at Baccalaureate rehearsal. Anyway, 2002, there was a 20.
Okay, I think anti wine just turned into anti alibi.
2002, there was a 21st century charter school that was started in the facility.
Oh, that would have been badass.
And then it, like, there were a lot of
weird but badass
office spaces in there. So in 2006, the tenants were Bands of America, the Consulate of Mexico, Indiana Museum of African American History, Japan American Society of Indiana, and the Indiana Pacers Academy, which was another charter school.
That's a pretty distinguished group of
tenants. Yeah, and it's still like a lot of it, I think, is still office buildings and stuff.
How do you get the Mexican consulate in downtown Indianapolis?
I don't know, but it's not in there anymore. It's got its own building now.
That's interesting to me, but that's a pretty distinguished row of people to share space with.
Mm-hmm. So in January 2011, the underground walkway between the convention center and Lucas Oil Stadium opened.
Yep.
And that contains a connection to Crown Plaza Hotel.
Yep.
Okay, and I know of this, but have not done that. You can literally, and I've been in mm-hmm. Chicago hotels that do this.
Yeah.
And just have subterranean walkways.
Downtown Indy is crawling.
With tunnels.
With
yeah.
tunnels.
Right, so you're reducing your foot traffic on city surface streets, mm-hmm. which is a good idea. And most of the people that are coming to that location, you say your Crown Point Hotel, are probably there for destination events that are...
In Lucas the convention Oil. Center.
Right.
So, okay. Makes all kinds of sense.
The station is served by two Amtrak three-way motor coach lines, including the Western and Central Illinois line, which goes to the Quad Cities, Peoria, Bloomington Normal, Champaign-Urbana, and Danville.
Oh, absolutely.
The other line stops at Nashville, Louisville, and Cincinnati en route to Chicago, which I don't think... From Indianapolis, it's actually en route to Chicago to stop.
How would you like? I'm trying to do the geography, and there's puppeteering over there. I did nothing of the sort.
So the biggest tenant there now,
yes.
is the Crown Plaza Hotel, which contains the Grand Hall, where they hold weddings and events. There are two 20-foot diameter wheel windows and 3,200 square feet of original stained glass.
I was going to say, that's bookable space.
Yeah. So the windows have a gray tint because during World War I, they were blacked out with paint.
That's an awesome
thing. See, that's right? like...
That's that nugget in the story.
Mm-hmm.
That's very cool.
In the hotel train shed, there are three lines, the blue, green, and red... There are 13 cars that have two rooms per car, so you can actually rent Pullman cars.
I do too.
It's on my bucket list.
I know.
I was like, bucket list.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. That's why I said it's a bucket list thing, baby. And then you came back with, well, let's book it. And I said, let's wait until you've slept.
Yeah, I said, let's book it. And then I saw where they put the fucking comma in the number, and I was like,
baby, it's not that bad. Anyway.
Dude, that's why I texted you and said I was...
And I'm so very sorry. I'm sorry, Crown Point Hotel?
Crown Plaza Hotel. 13 cars. They're Pullman rail cars that you can sleep in. They're all named after famous early to mid-20th century people like Charlie Chaplin, Jean Harlow, Winston Churchill, and Amelia Earhart. So here are the legends surrounding Union Station. One of the legends... is that Thomas Edison worked there. He worked as a telegraph operator, but he was fired for conducting too many experiments on the job.
Go ahead, because I won't do it. Geographically, that's not
necessarily, because Indianapolis was the crossroads.
And so...
And Union Station was the first...
And yeah. Edison was in two places.
I like that, but keep going. Okay. That's very cool.
There are supposed secret cubby holes and stairways in the upper part of the building, and one goes to the clock.
As long as none is a murder hole, we're good.
Right? There are stories of the station being a stop on the Underground Railroad.
I like that. There's a tie in there.
Where slaves were held in a room in the southeast corner until transport could be arranged. But they were packed in until it was, like, super hot, and then a bunch of people collapsed on the floor. Those that died... were buried by the people who were trying to help them at Green Lawn Cemetery under different names.
Stop right there.
So that may be something Green to look
Lawn,
into.
But hold on. Green Lawn was the one that was is in Crown Hill now.
Yeah.
It was absorbed by Crown
Hill. They reinterred. Green Lawn moved.
Not only were they misnamed, they may have been moved. So, yeah, there you go.
Wow. I mean, we gloss over that, but that was a huge bunch of info right there.
There is a mysterious man who apparently roams the halls at night. You can see him standing on stairs that once led to the trains. He falls over clutching his chest, seems to struggle briefly, then looks peaceful and disappears. It's possible, if I read things right, that this man is John W. Doherty, who died of a heart attack brought on by heat stroke on August 27th, 1912.
That's so specific. So, awesome.
But your residual haunt is your death over and over and over again. Like, ugh.
That's ugh. Something that we
and I know it happens. No, 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 it happens because there are like there are ghosts that like fall downstairs over and over and over again. Like there are
right, the yeah, walks off but, the ledge. Over yeah, and yeah, over yeah, yeah.
What is Union Station made of?
Granite, and bricks.
Yeah.
Then there's the story of ghost Run, figures, which is what they call the statues. These statues are all white, so they do look like ghosts, you know? There was a security guard on night shift. He heard voices and spotted what looked like a soldier. He thought it was a Civil War reenactor. So he called out to him, like, tried to chase him down, turned the corner. No one was there. He saw the soldier later, followed him again, turned the corner, came face to face with one of the statues, but the soldier wasn't there.
Was not.
He saw him a third time, oof, waited until the soldier passed him, tried to grab him,
oop,
and the soldier vanished.
And then you just look silly.
He just Scooby-Dooed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Yep.
That's a fucking he maneuver
totally
right there.
Did Scooby-Doo
and now,
it. Like,
this next part may dash my hopes of ever being able to stay in the Pullman cars.
Why?
Oh, fudge.
Because in the Pullman cars, there are stories of cold fingers touching toes.
Oh, no.
Guess
oh,
we're foot never touching. Going. Guess what? I don't have to worry about how much they cost.
Covers
now
are taken from guests. See, I told you. I told you. It was going to no totally ruin it for
do
me.
Do you discount your rates for these things? No.
No.
And here's the last one. The car jiggles as if the train is in motion. Here is the thing, though. There is an active train station still in this building.
Yeah.
So you're going to get vibrations.
So you're going to get vibrations. I get vibrations in my house
because
from the train that, yeah, from the proximity to the railroad that goes by my house.
Absolutely.
It took me a really fucking long time to get used to that.
That's
so,
tons and tons of iron and steel
going over a road. Yeah, and so, like, there are times where the train will go and
okay,
my
so
bed
you,
will
you've
shake.
Explained away one of them. How close are we getting to these cars?
I
can't do the other two, can we?
I don't know. I'm going to have
cold
to look into it.
Touching, I imagine you're out.
Yeah. If I get touched, I'm going to be like, no.
Cold hand on foot.
Yeah.
That makes it even more fucked up for her.
Might.
I can see you launching out.
No. See, what's going to happen is we're going to go and we're going to stay, and I'm going to whip the blanket under my feet, or at least a blanket under my feet.
Okay, good luck with that. I will be in a Ramada 4.3 miles away asking you how the hell that went. No, we're not staying at the creepy cold finger touchy fucking train car.
Fine.
Come on.
What?
The creepy cold finger touchy
okay,
fucking train
has
car.
It got any more ghost stories?
No.
Oh, I dashed her hopes and now she's pouting. I'm sorry, we can definitely go.
It's your turn now.
Whose turn?
Your turn.
My turn, asshole.
Here,
do I get cans?
Yeah.
Thank you.
You can have mine.
She's not talking to me anymore anyway. It's all right. Don't worry. Okay.
You won't let me just stay in the train cars.
You're not going to stay in the train cars.
I'm going to come on.
I'll go with you.
I stayed in the haunted cabin.
With the shoes.
With the shoes. I didn't stay in that room.
I was going to say, she stayed in the safest place in that cabin.
I did.
Okay.
Can someone talk?
Toss you a blankie? What do you need? What are we doing? Okay. Well, we're just continuing on with the episode. Hey, it's
we
me.
Are.
It's Malcolm.
Yes.
I'm here.
Yes.
I just want to take a minute and say that we're in a different location recording.
We are.
We're at Casa del Mio.
Yes.
And it's so awesome to have you guys here. I got to do another story. As bad as the last two went.
They were good.
Given another story. I got a story, and I have to preface this really quick, is that this story, I'm not as good as you two where I can just dish out the information and get through it. This one's going to require a little bit of participation in the room. Okay?
Okay.
Because there are sinking fields all over this story. And where this could be a nice and tidy event where I put a little content down, it could also turn into ye old shit show at any point in time.
I'll rub my nose, dude.
Well, because I'm not certainly going to rub your nose, so you better do it. I got to do the Mumler photos
yes.
as a story. I didn't know shit about the Mumler photos. I knew of A, Mumbler photo, which I think everybody knows of. But so my sources on this are wild, crazy, and varied, but I did a little wiki.com. I did history.com. I did SmithsonianMag.com. Specifically, I did SmithsonianMag.com, Peter Manso's article.
Okay.
Peter Manso is pretty much the guy that knows everything about the Mumbler photos. He is the preeminent fucking source of information. He's got a book out that I listened to a little bit of called The Apparitionists. So, we're going to jump right in and let me take you to where we are. William H. Mumbler, born 1832.
Did you make your cup into a spider?
It's a Cthulhu, leave it alone.
What we have a problem with, ladies and gentlemen, is that there is a damn tackle box full of googly eyes on the table right now. I think I've been very
on my phone.
I've been very respectful through everyone else's stories.
We're done.
And now
eyes on your
William H. Mumbler.
Mumbler.
Was born in 1832 somewhere in fucking Massachusetts. That's actually the name of the town somewhere.
Somewhere in Massachusetts.
Very, very little is known about his early life. We don't know who the parents are. They're not of record or of note. What we know is that Mumbler, as a young man, was known as a tinkerer. He was what they called a kitchen architect. He was always had a project. He was a serial entrepreneur.
He had ADHD.
Always. That's not in my notes, but we'll go with it. He was only trained in one vocation. He was a silver engraver in Massachusetts as a young man.
That makes all sorts of sense.
What I want to jump into right now, and I know I'm not so good with the linear part of this storytelling, and this is why I always have to keep apologizing, but I want us to think about where we are at this point in time. We are in, as he gets older, into his late 20s, into his 30s, we are post-Civil War America. Yes. Can we agree on that?
Yep.
Well, tell me the location. The man's still in Massachusetts. He's located to Boston now. There's no record that I can find of him taking a wife or a partner. And one of the things that is happening as the Civil War is ending, two things actually. It is the advent of photography.
Yes.
This started during the Civil War. This is something that is more now becoming not the common man's trade, but the learned man's trade, and the devices and the components to do photography in one's home are becoming more and more affordable.
And accessible.
And accessible. Very good. The other thing that has come up in this point in time is what I have found to be referred to as Civil War era spiritualism.
Yep.
There is a groundswell, especially in the northeastern United States at this point in time, in not fringe, not underground, but socially accepted, traded and talked upon spiritualism as a component to everyday life and how we understand the world around us.
Well, Mary Todd Lincoln was one, wasn't she?
She was.
That was a big one.
And you have just trumped me as Segway Master of the Year.
So is Dickens. So is... Not Dickens. Yes, Dickens.
Charles Dickens was. Poe was also a spiritualist. So what you have is...
There was another name I was trying to think
of. Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's gone. Oh. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Doyle was a spirit. Okay. So, and I guess I waited for those names to make the point that this was not a fringe thing. Mm-hmm. Very respected members of society.
Oh, Harry Houdini.
Government, theater and entertainment were very, this was what was happening at the time. So if you are a young entrepreneurial guy and you have a little bit of chemistry background, self-taught, little bit of tinkerer in you, you're an entrepreneurial dude, you pick up what we would essentially do is the hobby of photography, is what William does. And Mumbler really kind of creates, through accident, what is going to be what makes him famous and infamous. The fucker took a selfie. He's dicking around at home and he's doing photography and he just keeps taking photos of himself. And here's what I will not go into, and our listeners can jump in and tell me what I don't know about early era photography. I don't know all of it, but pretty much what you're doing is superimposing images. Mm-hmm. And if you keep superimposing images, some of those images are residual behind themselves. Mm-hmm. From what I understand it to be, it is a process of double exposure and superimposition. That is mm-hmm. as technical as I'm going to attempt to fucking
get. No, that's cool.
Yeah. But the result was that in a picture of himself, he saw a background faded white image of himself from another exposure on that picture.
Mm-hmm. Ghost photography.
And we start spirit photography.
Yes.
So now we kind of get a little bit with the dates, but he's a man of about 25, 30 years old. So we're in the early 1860s. Okay. What just ended in the early to mid 1860s? The Civil War. What is rising? Spiritualism. Right. What do we have here? A bona fide entrepreneur, and he figures out I can make a buck.
There's a whole lot of dead people and their relatives who want to talk to them.
And see them.
And be seen with them. Yeah. So for a dollar, you can walk into this man's studio, and he's going to take a picture. And here's the whole thing about it. He wasn't a fucking dunce. He said, I make no claims. I guarantee nothing.
But
I don't control the spirits, he says, but they move around me.
I hedge my bets.
And you may have an experience here in my studio if you pay your dollar.
Yeah.
And inevitably, when people were really, really in the movement and mood, they would talk to him about their departed loved ones. Well, her name was Stephanie, and she stood 5.5 feet tall and wore her hair in a bun. And the whole time, this dude's flipping through exposure frames going, I got a rough one. And people were so moved by it that they didn't really realize that Stephanie was 5'2" and she wore her hair in pigtails. They were like, oh. Because photography was so new at the time, nobody really questioned the fact that you could capture ethereal images on film.
Hmm.
And the technology was so new that there were not a lot of people that had the breadth of knowledge that our boy Mumler did to be able to contradict him and say, hey, you're a piece of shit and you're lying to people. So this goes on. This continues as his business for some time. In 1862, a man named James Wallace Black is a photographer of note in the Boston area. He's also an aerialist. He's credited with the first photograph from a hot air balloon. Took a picture of Boston from tops. Well, he sees all these people lined up at Mumler's fucking studio and sends his assistant over and goes, hey, pay the man what he wants.
See what
Figure out what the fuck's going on here. Because he said in an interview, I have tried to duplicate what this man has done, and through my understanding of modern photography science, I cannot. So he's got people in a pickle. Plus, you are also dealing with the swell of spiritualism that are just like, this is really what it is. Of yeah. course, I've got a picture with my Aunt Jean, because right. that's how photography
works. So you think about that guy, if he wasn't the first aerialist, like the... Back when that type of photography was starting, it was like the exposure had to be a long time. Because they had people that you had to sit still
yep.
the entire time.
That's why you got sat for your picture.
Yeah.
Yep. It was almost as laborious as having somebody paint you at that point in time. But he was, and he changed how people viewed Black. What was his name again? I'm sorry. James Wallace Black. Really could have his own story, because that photo, when he went up in a hot air balloon and took a picture of a city.
That's pretty awesome.
It was the first time that people kind of had that reference of how small.
Yeah.
You know what? It was sort of a paradigm shift in how you viewed. He got an entire city in one frame of a camera. Mm. Nobody had ever done that before. Yeah. It was everybody just making their portrait and making their photo. So he was a respected dude. And so he sends down the apprentice. And the apprentice says, hey, you know, I'm just here to get my picture made. And and totally does the thing and then sees this apparition of his dead relative there. And he breaks down to Mumbler and he goes, okay, look, I'm here and James sent me. And if you could just show him, he'll pay you $50 if you can prove it to him. So James Wallace Black goes to Mumbler's studio because Mumbler's like, dude, send him. I've got nothing to hide. Send him. He can watch my entire process from start to finish.
I didn't know this whole go.
And I'm sorry, it gets so deep. But
no,
anyway,
no, I didn't know any of this.
So Black shows
awesome.
Up, right? Mm-hmm. And Mumbler's like, hey, you're welcome here. What do you want to do? He's like, take my photo. He's like, I'm a photographer. I know how we do this stuff. I just want to watch how you process the photo. I don't have the quote, but as the story goes, he watches Mumbler from flash to finish on this. And as the photo's being exposed, James Wallace Black sees his image.
Uh-huh.
And then sees a white ghastly figure behind him that is his relative that has passed. Mm-hmm. And he is shocked. He is in awe. He is now a believer. The true skeptic has been turned over, and he lauds the man as the real deal. And a lot of people do. We all know now in retrospect that this was not a spiritual situation. This was not a, in this, I've got written down here, spoopy. Where is the spoopy in this? There's no spoopy in it.
No. Mm-hmm.
This is a charlatan.
It's a P.T. Barnum shit.
But let me get you there. Hold on to that because
thank you.
P.T. shows up.
He does,
yay.
Yeah.
P.T. shows up in the story. So we're going to go 4 or 5 years ahead, okay? He's doing this. He keeps doing this. He's making money from doing this. Once again, I don't claim that anything's going to happen. Nah. We keep going through. Some people, because what's happening also is your spiritualism wave is waning. The photography technology is gaining,
yep.
And more people
know
what to do.
We're
going to
run into a problem
now.
Here.
Yeah.
So my man runs into some problems. the first of which is a lady comes in to have a sitting. She takes a photograph with him. Her brother, who died in the Civil War, appears in the apparition. And this was so much of what his business was, because you talk about trauma and tragedy changing the landscape of the people.
Yes.
We had 1 in 17 humans on this continent die over 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wanted to make sense of it in a time where you couldn't. That is why the rise of spiritualism. So he harnesses this and he goes, this is what we're going to do. And it goes great for a while. One of the first things that happens that's really going to give our boy Mumbler a problem, old Billy Mums, is that the lady comes in, she's grief-stricken. I heard that you can take my photo and maybe show me with my brother again. Madam, I make no guarantees. Please have your sitting. Let's do this. She gets a photograph. Her brother is in it. He's long lost from the Civil War and she leaves. And 2 weeks later, he walks up the fucking front drive alive and well.
Yep, here we go. Oops.
Got one better for you. Shit there keeps happening to our poor boy, Billy Mums. A guy comes in to get a photograph taken.
Oh my God.
The person in front of him in line is they're having their photograph done with their dear aunt who has passed away. And dude looks over and goes, hey, that's my fucking wife. She's alive and well, and she just came in here last week for a photograph with this guy.
Oops.
So what the fuck's going on? So the heat comes down on Slick Willie Mumbler.
Yep.
And he says, fuck it, I'm out. I'm gone.
Well, of course.
I'm off to New York City, where I can just go into another group of dumbass fucking people and ply my trade.
Yep,
and they don't. Well, New York may have been a little bit more cosmopolitan than Boston at the time, because he showed up.
He's going to have some competition for scammers.
Charged with fraud.
Oh.
Immediately.
Even better.
Sued for fraud in New York State Court.
Oh. Wow, he just like...
You're in New York City. Everything's fraud, and they picked his ass out on the way in and said, no. 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 So this takes me to the 1869 fraud trial of William H. Mumler.
Holy shit.
This was not a trial by jury. This was a trial by judge.
Oh.
He was charged with frauding the public with false claims. P.T. Barnum, who was running a rather successful menagerie in the city at the time, was also known as a little bit of a hack.
You think?
And a bumpkin. And a swindler. He volunteered to be a witness at the trial of William H. Mumler.
Oh my God.
He decries the man as a humbugger. And a fraud. He admits in open court that he deceives his public, but always to an end of entertainment, and that this man's fraud should not be dealt with by the public. And
he's not bullshitting you nicely.
I'm bullshitting you in terms that you can understand. Yeah. This guy's just fucking you over, you guys.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
P.T. Barnum goes the step further. Hires a man named Abraham Bogardus. Abraham Bogardus and says, hey, you are the preeminent photography guy in New York City. You know what I want? Take Abraham Lincoln and put him standing behind me. He walks into open court with this photograph and goes, any schmuck that knows shit about photography can do this. This guy's a hack.
Nice.
P.T. Barnum, actually, he never lied about lying to you.
No, he didn't.
That was his point. What a great thing. That's what he said. I will deceive you to entertain you, but I'm going to tell you that I'm deceiving you.
It's bullshit.
This man is trafficking in bullshit without calling you. Yes. So, Mumler's acquitted. They said that they could not find evidence, and here's what they said. Because the science of photography is so new and not understood, nobody has ever caught him in the act of defrauding somebody, and we are just generating an opinion on his work. Acquitted. Discredited. Penniless. Fucked. But that's not where our boy Mumler ends.
Of course not.
Of course not.
So, he fucks off back to Massachusetts. This trial was 1869, right? Mm-hmm. The most famous Mumler photograph that people know of, and you brought this up earlier, was our girl, Mary Todd Lincoln, who was a massive spiritualist.
Yeah.
Some say she was touched in other ways. Nobody knows, but she was all in on this. And after the debunking of Mumler, she comes to Boston and wants a photograph with her husband. 1870, a full year after he was tried in court as a fraud.
Right.
The most famous photograph he ever did happens, and it's out there to see on the web, and it's Mary Todd Lincoln sitting down and her husband standing behind her with his hands on her shoulders. Mm-hmm. And it was very obviously a... it was a photo of Abraham Lincoln that was already existed that was used to, you know, superimpose itself onto this photo. So he goes on, right? He never does spiritualism again. He never does spiritual photography again, but he is still one of the preeminent minds in photography and image science at the time.
Right.
He goes on to develop what is called today the Mumler process, and what it is, once again, I won't get too technical, but it was how people learned to transfer photographs onto newsprint so you could print a picture in the paper. Imagine this. Huh. There weren't pictures in paper before the late 1800s. It was all words.
Unless they were illustrations.
It was exactly. You could draw something, but everything was text type print press.
Yeah.
It makes sense, though.
Yep.
It makes complete fucking sense.
So he goes on to not get any note of fucking riety from this. Google Mumler, You've got to find the Mueller process 8 pages down the road. All he's known as is the guy is the fraud that did the picture with, and he did a couple other photos. He did a photo.
You bullshitted today.
He did a photo with another medium named Harrit, and is supposedly this guy was surrounded by spirits of different nations at the time. All of his shit has been debunked. The entire science behind what he did has been debunked. Mm-hmm. What I find very interesting is this, and I will wrap up what's probably way too long of a story, is that at that time, at that place, in this nation, in this world, it wasn't questioned. No. It wasn't questioned whatsoever. No, it was science of the time.
People were so engrossed in spiritualism during that time. Like, we talked about it with the story I did on Camp Chesterfield. Yeah, like, they were so engrossed in it. They so wanted that last contact. Like, you could...
Do you remember the Doctor Who episode?
Take, you know, advantage of them.
Where the oh gosh, the Cybermen were the ghosts of people.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
whole thing where they wanted it that bad.
That was, oh my God, now you're going to make me cry because
they wanted it that bad and Grandpa came back, right?
Yeah.
So that was kind of what he was offering was, you know what, you get that last contact. You get that. So I did this. And this isn't fair and this isn't part of the story, but it leaped into my mind as I'm reading about Mumler. Does anybody, and I'm sorry, gentleman died in 1884, May 16th, fucking penniless. That's the end of his story.
Mm-hmm.
His legacy was picked up by different people throughout time. And the most recent example, and the one that churns my fucking stomach the most, and I'm going to ask us to maybe hearken back to late 90s, early 2000s daytime television. Does anybody remember a guy named John Edward in a show about crossing over?
Crossing over?
Oh, that's
crossing over,
awful.
And we're going. It was a daytime, and you know what? And I'm picking up a name, and this is a guy feeding on. So we're talking about Mumler's use of the Civil War as a money making thing. There was an unaired 1 week long special of episodes of John Edward crossing over done after 9/11, where survivors. And family members of those lost were brought onto the show and reconnected with their family.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And there was so much backlash to the company and corporation and the fucking network that they were obviously taking advantage of traumatized people. This wasn't like 2015. This was October of 2011.
Look, I don't care. Like, I don't believe in it. I know that there are people that do believe in it. I don't care if I was the biggest believer on the face of the fucking planet. That would be wrong.
He's not it. What, you if you're a believer, you believe in something that he's not it.
It's not even that. It's you don't do that
shit. You don't
shit
prey on trauma.
For somebody else's entertainment. If you wanted to put the people in contact with their loved ones, don't fucking film it.
I got the cake.
And
I got the icing.
Profit.
I got the icing. It was their Sweeps Week episode. So this was a calculated thing. Think about when Sweeps Week is.
Look.
Think about when 9/11 was. This was, and granted, they're in the business to make money out of sensationalism, but it just really kind of grabbed me that it was done in the same vein as this twat Mueller, or Mumler, sorry.
Mueller.
I don't know. Googly eyes are getting at me.
I haven't turned my cup away.
Of just... profiting off of grief.
Well, and
grief
that's
profiting.
That's kind of what became the downfall of spiritualism and why people are so skeptical of people when they say, I can speak with spirits, da-da-da-da-da, because there were so many fakes and so many people taking advantage
and
so many
like
frauds.
Old-time London and a stupid fucking movie, the Sherlock Holmes, where the lady comes up and she's like, oh, I tell your fortune. She comes out of nowhere and it's just like, oh, he wears the garb of Mary. Tell me about the warts. Are they extensive? And she turns to fat.
I just made Chase watch that.
Oh, it's so good. Anyway, it's a really good, it's a really good scene. But anyway, that is it. That's all I have on Mumler. There wasn't anything there. It was bullshit from jump. Everybody knows it's bullshit. But here, stop.
But it's
Let me do
legendary
this
bullshit.
Peter Manso. Peter Manso wrote a book called Apparitionists.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This book is the definitive story of the life of William H. Mumler and deals with Civil War spiritualism. This dude, if you want his bona fides, let me tell you about my guy. Curator of the American Religious History fucking segment of the Smithsonian.
Oh, wow.
Dude's a gangster.
He's got, like, the ability to get all the information.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because they have all the information.
Because some of us don't know how little in the world we are. He's got an email from your boy asking him if he would like to do a little wrap-up interview about the thing. But he wrote his book in 2017. The book is out there. I recommend his shit. And if this topic is to be spoken on...
That's the guy.
Peter Manso is the guy. He's literally like the authority on the whole thing. So
awesome.
Thanks so much for letting me do it. I'm sorry that dragged on, but that was all. I thought you were right there until just now.
You missed him leaving? You
totally missed him leaving.
Hi.
That was some... Okay. No, we're good. If you want to stop teleporting from place to place, that would be
I'm a cryptid.
I'm a cryptid.
And that was it. Thank you so much. I yield my time to the senator from Indiana.
So, last one of the mega episode is we're back to trains.
Trains, lots of trains!
Whoa. Yep. Which was a video you could get back in, I think, the late 90s.
Okay, like the adult video or the...
No.
Oh, different
like
trains,
the kids,
trains. Okay,
kids
sorry.
Video of trains, lots of trains.
Okay, yeah, what was his name? What was the famous train?
Thomas?
Thomas.
Thomas is way older, or way younger than us, dude.
Oh, sorry. Is he?
Yeah.
That's the only train I know.
Yeah, no, this was a random one.
Just random trains?
Yeah.
We're halfway there.
And I'm doing... The London Necropolis Railway and Brookwood.
My favorite word in the world is necropolis.
I thought it was oubliette.
It's a close second.
Okay.
You cut me to the quick.
I'm sorry.
You're so right. I love that fucking word.
Necropolis and oubliette. Yeah. Like, that's a great, like, that wins. That's like the it two does. Midgets shitting in a bucket card during Cards Against Humanity.
Everybody can just fold. Oh. Because the game is over. I'm sorry. I don't care what you say. I do have two midgets shitting in a bucket.
I win.
I won Cards Against Humanity last night.
Good for you.
Go, man.
Nice.
Way to go.
I'm so proud.
Okay.
Hit me with it. We're London.
We are going to, yes, London, Necropolis, Railway, and Brookwood. My sources are Atlas Obscura, per usual.
Hey.
NationalGeographic.co.uk. BrookwoodCemetery.com. And it says VauxhallHistory.org. I bet you money that's not how you say that. CabinetMagazine.org and TBCS.org.uk.
Dude, that are some varied sources. I like your story already.
Well, and there, I have more later, but that's for...
Well, this is for now.
We're at now.
Damn, dude, we rally on that one. I tell you what, that is good studio fucking stereo right there.
Thank you, Mel Brooks.
Right?
Fuck you, Mel Brooks.
No, fuck you, Mel Brooks. We love
no, like, leave us alone, Mel Brooks. Derailed. Hold on.
Train's derailing all over the place.
All over the place.
The train has been lost in the sinking.
It did.
We're good. We're right here.
Okay. London Necropolis and National Museum Company was started by an act of Parliament. Parliament got all up in London's business sure. when it came to cemeteries. Like, they were having that much of a problem.
Parliament gets all up into London's business.
I feel like everything. These were places that were going into disrepair and would have been lost had they not.
1852. But do you remember?
I remember.
The...
Do you remember?
Oh, okay, Mike.
The 21st night in September.
No. Well, no, you chose poorly, dude. I do know where you were going.
You're my favorite.
I don't know.
No, we don't know, and that's what's best about it.
Okay.
Hey, seriously, okay. Some podcasts can't do two in a row. We can. Let's tighten it up.
All right.
Let's tighten it up. Let's go.
So,
baby. Let's go.
In 1852.
Tori's on the mic.
An act of Parliament put aside, or it gave permission to buy 2,000 acres. Trust me, I looked at it like 12 times.
It was acres.
It's really acres.
Oh, gosh. We have scarred her.
Ouch.
My son Hector.
Now I'm sad, and so because of that, Cthulhu Cup is going to look at you. That was the episode, okay? That just fucking happened. Shut your mouth.
I'm wearing a Cthulhu shirt.
Straight through my soul. I'd like to apologize for everything. Please make it end. Please make it stop. I'll shut up.
Here we go.
Okay, it's all
okay.
Right
now. So, and it says Woking, and it is the... It says Woking.
Okay, then that's what it says. Let's be real about
from
it.
From Lord Onslow is who they bought it from.
Okay.
They put 500 acres set out with two railway stations.
Mm-hmm.
Because I talked about the Magnificent Seven.
Yep.
With Highgate.
Yep.
Well, even with those, they were having problems. So they were like, okay, we got it.
Okay.
We're going to make a train and send them out of the city.
Right.
So they actually had a...
You're all right.
There we go. They set out a... They set 500 acres for two railway stations so it would run to the... And actually, there's another stop.
Okay.
But it's not directly to the cemetery anymore.
Understood. Okay.
But it is... Oh, it's in Woking. It's not in London. So it's like a half hour, 50 minutes maybe.
Okay.
Outside the city.
Outskirts of, yep.
For the cemetery because they ran out of space. They made the Magnificent Seven because that was the 30s, if you remember.
Right.
Yeah.
So we'd hit
It was an answer to...
This Magnificent Seven wasn't enough, is right. What it was. So they said, okay, we will... And it was Sir Richard Brown and Richard Spry who proposed this railway.
Brown and Spry.
So two dicks.
I mean, and one was knighted. So,
it was the more important dick.
So we had 2,000 acres. They set 500 out to begin with for the cemetery.
Okay, yeah.
They're going to send, and this is once again 1852. It was the largest one of the largest cemeteries in the world at the time.
At the time, it was
right. And it to this day is the largest in the UK.
Okay. Well, that's good information.
Because so it put it far enough outside the city that it could grow to a certain spot or certain size.
Right. The acreage is going to allow it to take on so many. Okay.
So it was consecrated on November 7th, 1854. Opened later that month. They used to run private trains.
Like private passenger trains?
Well, okay, so this is London in the 1850s. Like, sure. We're going to run into a problem because not everybody's going to want to ride on the train with everybody else.
No.
We might have a class issue.
Well, a little bit, man. The puffs and the toffs.
What?
So you could go first class, second class, or third class.
Oh, okay, so it's...
Yeah, and there's tickets. You can look up the ticket.
Well, it's like Titanic. Yeah, Snowpiercer. Go ahead.
London, it's the London and Southwestern Railway is what the spur was part of.
Okay.
And they had a private terminus at Waterloo. So Waterloo, that first Necropolis station was just for it.
Was just
like
spurred
it
out.
Wasn't. It's not like a train station like the Union Station. This is like...
Hub service to Waterloo and back.
Yes. Out to Brookwood.
Brookwood.
Because Brookwood's what the cemetery is.
Gotcha. Okay.
So the original terminus, which is... If you look up pictures of London Necropolis Railway, it'll bring up the pictures, especially the older ones, of the building before it was demolished in 1902. Because they had to redo the station.
Okay.
eventually, which then moved, so the Necropolis station went to 121 Westminster Bridge. And that one ran on demand till 1930.
Okay. Well, some stuff happened around 1930 that may have made it stop, but...
Hold on.
I'm the segue master. You go ahead.
The Waterloo station took bomb damage. I'm going to give you a date. And
Waterloo?
You
could
yeah. On April 16th, 1941. So what was going on in London in... April of 41.
The Blitzkrieg Bop?
No.
Well, yeah, it was the London Blitz, for sure. The worst night of shelling was that night.
Yep.
Was the worst night, and that trashed out.
I heard at it one point.
Gutted the station.
Figure of tonnage of metal, of bombs that fell in that night.
Oh my God.
It was unreal. Like, yeah. You literally could have buried
was
the city.
Was the worst night of shelling.
Yeah.
Totally. But it didn't... The facade's still there.
Right.
The facade of the Waterloo Station is still there.
Right.
The actual railway line, the only thing is left, and they...
It's the street front visage, right? That
right.
remains. Everything behind it has been rebuilt.
It's office building.
Yeah.
And it's private.
It's commercial
you can't
space.
Go... They don't do ghost hunts or anything.
Nope.
They're like, no.
They've repurposed
yeah,
the area.
They're like, no. So that there's a building in an arch that goes to like the next building that is still part of. So it's like the frontage and then an arch
right.
is all that's left. There's a little bitty section of track at the actual railway
okay.
or at the actual cemetery.
Uh-huh.
But because of it didn't run forever.
It was a stagnant railway.
Right.
For so
it
long.
Just kind of
it went to the earth.
Fell, yeah, it fell
yeah.
apart. So
I see you flipping your notes. We're on a different color of ink.
No, we're not. We're still on blue.
Oh gosh, we're getting ready to go pink though.
Yes, that's a different
oh,
subject.
Okay, let's go.
So, at least 21 London cemeteries were relocated to Brookwood. This is where we, yes, there
oh,
we go.
Okay.
We're moving them now.
This is the disinterment, deinterment, and moving of the,
In 1862 is its first load from the city.
Okay.
And it's like, they were rail, oh, it was 7,950 people. Sets of remains went out.
I was
going to
say,
wow.
At this point, not people, but sets of remains
sets
is really
of remains.
What we're dealing with. Not to make it like, but literally, these are not freshly dead cadavers.
No.
Most of them been in the ground probably.
Most of them, this is remains.
So you're removing
it's
remains.
It's remains. But still, disinterment is just never a
we've always
good
agreed
idea.
On it. Yeah.
After the official closure of the rail line... They still carried the coffins on the old, or on other trains.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it'd be a passenger train, and then there'd be a coffin car. They stopped
right.
doing that. They were
yeah,
like,
well, you could go to get coffee and end up in the
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah, in 1988, the British Railways was like, nope, we're done. We're done. No more.
And they probably had a couple complaints by then.
I'm betting they did.
Couple?
The Brookwood Cemetery Act of 1975 allowed a surplus of land that was attached to Brookwood be sold off. Remember I said it was 2,000
yes,
acres?
Yes, but not all used at that
but
time.
But not all used?
Yes.
They sold a bunch off.
Which if you're the state and you own that, that's an asset that you can liquidate.
Right.
Okay, fair enough.
So, now we're to Brookwood.
Let's go to Brookwood.
Right? It had to be enclosed by a fence, and apparently it's got an iconic fence that it gave me...
Like movie scene sort of iconic?
No,
or?
I think more like when we think of Crown Hill's fence.
Okay, so
it's,
the pike...
I think
yeah.
it's...
The pike bar fence sort of spike top.
You know what's really freaking creepy? There's a bus stop outside of Crown Hill. Can you imagine having to stop at that bus stop at night? And some random dudes hanging out. Like, no, no.
Look.
No, thank you.
I wouldn't. Okay, I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop.
Go ahead and stop.
And we're going to go to Brookwood.
Let's go to Brookwood. Sorry. No. It was a good.
But they had a wooden fence to start in 1902. It's a 2.5 meter.
Stop it with your measurement units, you.
I have it all written down.
How many feet was it?
I'm not doing the conversion. That's why I said in metric, not freedom units. That's right. They fucked me over before.
How many centimeters is your black eye, Patrick?
So the southern half was called the Woking Necropolis. There are 132 sections in this cemetery. This, seriously reminded me of Crown Hill in a lot of ways.
It shares a lot of what you've called Crown Hill characteristics, the way that it's set up.
And this is me comparing to what I know to something else, but this is what, yeah.
It's the only way you can do it.
It was the largest cemetery in the world in 1854. 64 acres were sold off for the Working Convict Invalid Prison.
Let's get a little.
That is a whole rabbit hole that I'm not going to touch.
Thank you for just stepping over that, because that's another episode.
Yeah, exactly. Cremation Society of Great Britain they bought land in 1878. And in 1879, they opened the first crematorium in Britain.
They created a society dedicated to cremation? The Cremation Society of Great Britain?
Well,
like, secret society.
No. not that kind of, like, it was, yeah.
But, like, a group of people got together and felt so strongly about cremation that they...
Well, they made it happen.
Well, obviously. So, nobody called me.
They also they have the Brookwood Military Cemetery, which put in 1917, which is right when?
After
World War I.
Trench warfare.
Yep. So, 37 acres. And with Brookwood, they didn't put... Oh, it doesn't have it on here. They like offered the cemetery for soldiers.
Okay.
And they didn't take them up for 5 years until all of a sudden they needed to take them up.
Right. How nice of an offer. Yes. No, thank you.
We don't need you. Yeah, we do.
Yep. So it became the Brookwood Military Cemetery at that point.
Yes. There is a Brookwood American Cemetery and Memorial there. Yeah, this is...
On Old Anglaterra?
Hold on. There's 132 sections of this cemetery.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
And, like, they have Zoroastrian, like, Muslim.
So they've done very well with their smaller area of acreage to divvy it up.
Yes. And it was, like, if you look up the map, it's really, you can hover on stuff and it's like, this person's here. This person's here.
This sounds to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because you are the cemetery authority.
Cemetery.
This
chick.
Sounds like an English cemetery thing that we don't do here as much.
As have the sections walled off?
Sections based by ethnicity, based by, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and they had like, they...
Well, like the other one that we were talking about earlier.
We did have segregated cemeteries.
Well, yes, we did, but like 2% for heretics. You know what I mean? Going back to that.
Yep.
This sounds like a very
they
English
have like
thing.
Everything was oh, and you know what?
Pet cemetery.
Oh, are you
sounds
looking
like
at pictures?
A great name for a movie. At the... Anyway, I didn't mean to derail.
I thought
it was very interesting.
So here was the Brookwood, the American cemetery. They in World War I, 486. Soldiers were there, buried there, right?
Okay.
So in World War II in 1944, 3,600 soldiers were buried.
See.
In May of, or between January and May of 48, the Quartermaster General of the U.S. Army, this was just a random thought.
This is so cool.
Exhumed, they grabbed them and they either sent them home or they sent him to a different cemetery. One more time. We're just moving people now. But them going home was pretty cool. I did like that part. Like, they had the, family had the chance to say, bring them home.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about this earlier, maybe on an episode. Maybe we're even recording it this time. It's been so long. But this whole reality versus mythology on, you know, and I don't want to belittle it whatsoever, but what you were talking about before with, like, renting grave space.
That's...
You know, at some point in time...
We're running out of room to put us.
There's only so much terra firma going down. Anyway. It's so cool. I love the facade of that building, but go ahead.
Well, and the one thing about this is it went to, like, back to nature. Because it was so big that... Nobody could take care of that.
Couple world wars, nobody's going to be able to take care of it.
Nope. A lot of it went back to nature. They are reclaiming it now.
Reminds me of the
Catacombs. Also, one of the old... Because there was the two chapels.
Yeah.
Because they had the north...
Nope.
It was north and south.
It was north and south.
Because it was east-west, and that is... Highgate, which was the one last time.
I'm trying so hard, yeah. But there are two chapels at...
There's two chapels, one burnt down. Oof. Like, I think by, like, lightning strike, which was just like... And then one of them fell, like, it kind of collapsed on itself because of dry rot.
Yep.
But now they have fixed that chapel, and now there's monks there.
So a functioning chapel
like.
Now.
Like, yeah.
So I've got to go back to this probably had some sort of English historical society status.
It is St. Edward the Martyr Orthodox Church.
Which, I mean, who
and they had relics from King Edward, which was Edward the Martyr there.
That's very cool.
And we haven't talked about relics.
No, we have not discussed relics.
I was just, because I was trying desperately to figure out what was there. I was like, do we have a finger bone? What do we have? Like, like, what's going on? Do we have tooth? Lock of hair? Because they did all of that.
Can I get a lock of hair, please?
They did all of that.
So okay. I don't know what it was, though. Some notable graves are John Singer Sargent.
Hey, sure. Hey,
let's go.
Evelyn and William De Morgan. And Evelyn was a painter. William was a ceramicist. Edward the Martyr, we talked about. He was reinterred there. That was a whole thing about, there was a spring and it was a miracle and
Did he get up and walk over to the new grave?
No.
Okay, good.
Dr. Robert Knox was there, and this was fun because
Bob Knox.
He was the anatomist.
He started the School of Hard Knocks.
He was the anatomist that worked with Burke and Hare.
Oh,
you remember who Burke and Hare are?
Chris?
They're the Scottish body thieves.
Ah.
What's interesting about that guy
is those
two. There we go!
Most of modern forensics is based on what the fuck they did.
Dude. Sketchy motherfuckers.
Sketchy motherfuckers that also really kind of laid the framework for
sketchy
modern
motherfuckers,
forensics.
Yep.
To tell what's happening.
And the last.
Human.
The last one, I just thought that was, because Burke and Hare, that story is insane.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a crazy story anyway. Dodi Fayed is the last one.
Give me more on Dodi.
He's the one who died with Princess Di.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, the driver, yeah?
Yeah, no, this is the boyfriend.
Oh, the boyfriend with Dodi. Okay, that was Dodi.
And then my last part is... I got at derelictplaces.co.uk. I looked at Reddit.
Nothing wrong with taking a peek.
No.
Because I'm about to give something else. And it's ghosthauntedproboards.com. Oh, no, baby. I went to the ghost boards.
You were on the boards.
Of course.
Good deal.
They see mists.
Oh, do they rising see
from
mists?
Rising from the graves. Now, here was, I don't know
fog
when this...
Fog in
No. Nope. London? Mist.
Oh, not Mystical even not even mists. In London. We're like out in yeah.
Fog in England?
Yeah, exactly.
It's mystical mists.
But then it turned into black robe figures chanting during pagan holidays.
Ooh.
So, but then they were saying, oh, they're Satanists. And then it was like, well, what if they were just pagans, like, saying what's up to their, like, dearly departed? What if
they were the Who's down in Whoville?
Yeah, like,
singing Ahu Pore.
So, there's cries of women and babies.
Do people actually cry out? Women and babies!
Exactly.
Okay, good.
There's a gentleman in a Victorian-era dress.
I heard that he's not such a gentleman, but go ahead.
And that was it. I could not find that much haunted shit.
That dress wasn't actually Victorian.
And I will say that I think last year, Brookwood, for Brookwood or whatever, is doing a museum of death to get people to come walk on the trails and all
but
that
stuff.
But
you can't go to where this is now because it's all
there's a rumor building. That Freddie Mercury is buried in Brookwood.
Ah, Christy got there before I did.
Sorry.
I'm just going to jump the fucking... All right, sorry, here we go.
No, there is, because his grandma...
Because his grandma?
His grandma's buried there?
His grandma's buried there.
Oh.
So there's... He could be buried there.
But there's not a whole lot of super spoopy superstitional stuff.
I just thought it was badass because of the train.
Yeah.
Number one, the train. And number two, its location. And that frontage facade of the station is so cool.
That's exactly why I did it.
It just harkens back to 1800s London so well.
Well, and you were talking about Mumler, and all I could think of was I went through a big, huge period, which I was looking at Memento Mori.
Okay,
and so Mumler feeds into that. The fucking death train feeds into that. Like, all of that goes...
You kept saying Barnum, and I was like, hold your E.T. horses. That was such a good story.
That man's everywhere!
Memento Mori is a great store in Disney World.
I think that we've kind of gone, like, new places with this episode. It's so much longer than most.
I think a good 20 minutes is going to get cut off.
Oh, I think so.
At least...
Do we want to tell people anything, or are we wrapping this one up?
I think we're good. I got nothing else.
Let's tease a little bit.
Thank you to our patrons. By this time, you will have both episodes of Cryptid
and
Corner.
And do we owe anybody credit for the stories that have come out today? Is anybody feeding us those, or are those your research?
This one was a cool-looking picture that I was like, what is this?
Well, I don't know. I think it's going to be 2 weeks from now when people are hearing this particular episode. Yes. Maybe longer.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Somewhere around there. Yeah. But hey, happy and healthy holidays to everybody that's out there kicking it with us.
Yes.
Happy Turkey Day.
And then we've got teases to do before we
do
our wrap up.
Happy Thanksgiving.
There's so much going on with Cryptid Corner right now.
Yep, which would be up. You guys have seen it.
There's Barton.
We love it.
There's Barton waiting in the wings.
Yep.
Eventually.
Got two up.
And we've got the potential of an episode of
You Bet Your VHS.
Which I just want to clarify for everybody is a segment where I literally bet my copy of a VHS movie and review the movie in the meantime.
Yes.
Yes.
I think it's going to be mediocre.
What if you're going to tease it, what movie did you watch?
I have, and this is what's terrible, because there's actually some like cinephiles out there that are like, will he do something that's meaningful? No. No, I'm not. No. I am doing the generic 1990s mid-fucking amazing movie with
Monster Squad?
Almost, but with a lot more.
As Chuck chimes in at the last minute.
All he does is just throw gold nuggets. I'm over here, I'm throwing gold into the fucking... No, I'm doing Twister.
Throwing gold
My initial episode of You Bet Your VHS is going to be my review of the movie Twister, and then I'm going to challenge our listeners to come up with the best quote from my favorite character in the movie, and those who do will actually receive a signed copy of the VHS movie Twister.
Well, the first person that does, because he's only got one copy of it.
I've only got one copy, but the best answer wins.
Yes.
So that's the premise. That's what I'm teasing. I'm done now, but we've had a mega episode. Let's go.
We did.
Let's go, mega episode. Give me the social media. Hey, hold on, really quick. Uh-huh. Because you started to do this in the last wrap of the last episode, where you started singing the social media outro. I think that's how we do it.
Singing?
You were. You were like, and you find a song. You'll hear it when it does.
I think that's how
we settle this, though, is we create a song. We do an outro social media.
She's singing it, though. That's horrible.
Like to the Oscar. The Oscar.
I don't get for singing all the time.
It's very simple, but you did. You just kind of melodied it up. You were like, and it's Insta on dot. Yeah, it was so good. I hope that you do it again. I think that's how we solve our social media outro
I'm
problem.
I'm going to have to, like, listen to that one, because now I'm not sure.
You know how we solve the social media outro problem? Google Trendy Lobotomy. It will pull up every podcaster we're on. It will pull up.
That's lazy as shit.
You can find us at, like, Gmail. So it's trendylobotomypodcast@gmail.com is our email.
Okay.
You can find us at trendypod on Twitter. At trendylobotomypod on both Facebook and Insta. And, of course, there's Patreon, which you get extra stuff.
And you guys are absolutely on every podcast platform known to
except
man, except for the
one Voldemort.
So, but, yeah, that's not going to work well for you. Anyway, the other thing that I was wondering is what can we do to help things?
Less.
Can we rate? Can
we rate, like, review,
download?
Can we
favorite.
Respond? Can we, yeah.
Like, tweet at us. Like, talk to us. Key point. That's what I want.
I can just say the next person that tweets at trendylobotomy.com that is not you, me, her, or him is getting a fucking t-shirt. I'm going to say it right now.
So, here's the thing.
Let's go.
We have put out that, or at least I know we put out on Facebook. I don't know if it's been out on other things. We are trying to figure out what we want to, how, what direction we want to take this in the new year. Because we are almost to
1 year.
1 year of aww. Recording.
Gotta get more wine.
So okay. we need a lot more wine.
It's all right.
We have some things that are in the works. We are discussing some changes that might be coming to the podcast.
Do I get to wear a wig?
Maybe.
Okay, sweet.
But we want to hear from you. What do you guys want? Do you want more urban legends? Do you want more spoopy stuff? Do you want just more legends in general? Do you want more listener stories? What do you want?
If y'all want more Cryptid Corner, I can work on
that's
that.
That's what I want. I really like some
you guys
more Cryptid Corner.
Let us know.
Yes.
Okay.
Because we would not be doing this if it wasn't for you.
So I think that was so very awesome that we got to talk to him and ask him to come back to action. Thanks so much for you guys. Like, literally, Trendy Lobotomy picked up the whole fucking studio, traveled out of state,
and broke their
head-butted
mic.
The mic.
We can't.
And descended upon.
We haven't figured out how to do actual
Camp Roselawn, and I think we pulled it off.
We did, man.
Let's go for the road show.
We have not quite figured out how to do the, like, Skyping people in thing yet. We'll get there.
We'll get there. Yeah, and we will.
Well, that means you're going to have more stories.
I'm going to have more. So, yeah, too bad for you guys.
I love how that went from, we're going to figure it out so that Christy can go visit Malcolm, to, well, this way Malcolm can do more stories.
Hey.
Look.
You know what?
I have one perspective on this.
When you log into the game.
And you have another perspective on this. Just saying.
When you log into the game as sexy voice guy, shit's exactly. going down. All right, so guess what I'm going to say?
What?
Bye.
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 We are all the captains of our own brain floats.